Okay, we'll call this meeting to order for Wednesday, December 14th. And this is kind of the, it's like baseball. This is a preseason, and I'm going to see how many errors I can make since I haven't been chair for a while. We have no quorum and no recognitions or proclamations, so we move directly to the consent calendar.
For the record, we do have a quorum.
Excuse me. See, I told you that's a first error.
Well, I was listening so far.
We have a quorum, but we do have no proclamation. So
that is fair. Helps.
We move directly to the adoption of the consent calendar. Consent calendar, things that we previously heard or things that are routine in nature. So I would take a motion to adopt
the consent. I'll move for approval of the consent calendar.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. No public hearings, decision in action. And an order to adopt the financial statement for the dissolution of Olalla Acres Subdevelopment Sanitary District and setting a hearing on the question of dissolving that district. Jerry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Jerry Herbich. And I'll be brief on this. You just read the order and it tells what you're doing today. You've had a number of various districts that you have previously dissolved, in fact, three so far. This is the fourth in that series. This action would approve the financial statement and set a hearing to have this dissolved. The district, the Olalla Acres Subdevelopment Sanitary District, was formed in 1978. And to the best of the information that we have, it essentially hasn't been active since it was formed. And it's, in fact, we have found through the clerk's office even no evidence of an election on the officers. So let's go over just a couple of things. I outlined the history here. Well, we're here because, in part, we received a letter from the Department of Revenue that this district has not filed its required financial documents. You initiated the process of dissolution back in September. Through Wayne, we've done a lot of due diligence, sending out letters to the people, compiling history, making sure that if you did dissolve this, that it would not have a negative effect and so on. How would our planning department handle this? So that's the kinds of due diligence that we've done in the interim. What you should know is that based on available information, the district has no assets or liabilities. So I think that makes this pretty clean. Let's take a quick look because we want to be quick. So what we would do if you approve of this order is you would approve the financial statement, which basically says no assets or liabilities. We would put that financial statement, we would file that with the clerk. So if anybody wanted to see that, we would do that. We would set a hearing on January 11, 2017 at 9:30 for interested persons to appear. If anyone had any claims against the district, they could present them at that time. We don't expect to be a problem. We expect that this would be a very short hearing based on what I told you that essentially hasn't been active since it was formed. If you have any questions, let me know.
Jerry, let me ask you a question. Why does this happen? I mean, they go to all the work to create it, and then they don't create it. Right. Do you have any idea what happened?
Well, when we looked at the history, it looked like it was formed with the idea that it would help with the financing of the repairs and maintenance. It looks like it was formed for that purpose. But there was also formed a homeowners association. And early on, they removed the sanitation part of it, but it's been there as a backup. And I think it's just a human nature kind of a thing and maybe a human miscalculation at the beginning about what they needed or how they would do things. Your question's a good one, and I The best that we can tell was formed for that financial support, but it never really happened that way.
So I guess just to clarify, the hearing would be held here as part of a Board of Commissioners meeting on Wednesday the 11th.
Yes.
And then if there's no public comment or input, then we would simply proceed to dissolve the district.
You could do that. I'd check with Wayne, but if you know, we don't expect anything. We've really been in contact with everyone. I could probably have some contingency paperwork drafted so you wouldn't have to see this again.
Wouldn't have to, I'm sorry.
So you wouldn't have to, come before you again?
Okay.
I think we could do that.
Okay.
And, and this would be the fourth thing that you would have taken care of. The nice thing, without an election, so without those cause.
Yeah.
And we could do that because of the specific facts of this.
Okay. But let's prepare the paperwork then and let's do a little government efficiency.
Do we need a motion
to approve this
order? The order, yes.
I move for approval of the order adopting a financial statement for the dissolution of the Olalla Acres Subdevelopment Sanitary District and setting a hearing on the question of dissolving the district on January 11th, 2017.
I'll second that. Now a little discussion.
I just wanted to say, again, thank Mr. Herbage for the work he's doing on this. These are very time-consuming, actually, as we found. To pull these together, but we're really cleaning up some things that needed to be cleaned up. So,
good. Okay. Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed.
Thank you very much.
So, Mr. Herbage, happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
I told him there's a policy in County Council's office. We do not get to get any older. So,
he's
violating that today.
Since it's your birthday, Mr. Herbage has a special skill of collecting, shall we say, just bad jokes.
Well, maybe it's your perspective.
Any regular, when we have a meeting, brings in a few to try to lighten. Some of them are real good, too. Happy birthday.
Enjoy.
Thank you very much.
We moved then to discussion and information, the Lincoln County Community Economic Development Grant Recommendations.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So we're here with another round of the Community and Economic Development Recommendations. 20 applications were eligible for review by the Economic Development Alliance Board for the $100,000 that is available. Caroline probably has a lot more to say about the recommendations. You want to go ahead?
I think you guys have a list of eight that were put forward by the board in their December 1st meeting, and then they added up to $100,000. There was some notes and discussion, which I've captured in some draft minutes, and be happy to share that, as far as their thinking, their discussion items. And they also discussed some future improvements, and they have some notes on that for future years.
Why don't you run down the list, if you would, of what is, you don't need to go the whole list, just the ones that were...
Sure thing. The City of Waltport, and these are in order of the points that were scored. They give points on seven different criteria, and then they add them up, and then they add up all the board members' points to come up with this a total point spread. And then they discuss it during their board meeting. So in the order of from highest points to lowest, the City of Waltport is working on a master plan for their industrial park and had a grant request for that. The Port of Alsea is one of the small ports of Oregon that is able to take advantage of dredging and has to come up with money to help pay for that dredging. So there's a dredging project related to Port of Alsea. Oregon Coast Community College Small Business Development is going to be upgrading some computers for their small business development classes. Habitat for Humanity is building a duplex, and that was a successful in terms of points. Northwest Coastal Housing, again, the two nonprofits that have to do with housing, I think our board took into account that housing is one of the highest, is considered one of the most, the biggest problems that we have right now, that our Economic Development Alliance is dedicated to doing what we can to help on that issue. And so we have two nonprofits that are related to housing. Lincoln City Cultural Center has gotten capital improvement grants from this fund before, and they applied again for elevator work. Elevator work in any of our public buildings is one of the most expensive things, so they're looking for help on that. Let's see. And then I think, Toledo Downtown Association has to do with a desperately needed signage for the city of Toledo in the welcome area entering and exit of the town. And that was something that Toledo Downtown Association is taking on. And then the other one, Friends of the Yahats Commons Foundation, is a nonprofit in support of helping with capital needs of the Yahats Commons, which in this case is LED lighting, so it does have that green and sustainability component. And they did make some adjustments on the amounts in their discussion. The adjustments on the amounts was based on whether they felt the project could go forward with less money than what was requested. And so they did make a few adjustments on the amounts in order to add up to $100,000. And there were other grants that were very worthy that came in below, but they did use the point threshold of 137 points and above. So the discussion was, you know, to make those adjustments and have it add up to 100,000, that type of thing.
Okay.
Yes.
Questions?
Yes.
Well, I guess I'd be interested in some of the dynamics or discussion in a
sure.
general sense mm-hmm. about job creation. One of the things I think that this economic development money needs to have a sharp focus on is projects that create jobs or retain jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I know it's an economic development and community improvement grant process,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but I'm interested in a general conversation about the board about mm-hmm. trying to target projects, requests that really have high correlation to job creation, job retention, mm-hmm. economic growth.
Yeah, they do have one of the criterias is community development and economic development. And so if something is purely community development, it gets a certain number of points. And if it has both community and economic development, it gets extra points. That's one of the ways that they try to look at these grants in terms of the scoring. When they're looking at the top three that got the three highest points, I think that the city of Waldport fixing an industrial park to attract people that would employ other people, I think that fits very well. The dredging is to accommodate. It's a small a commercial fleet, but there are crabbers at the Port of Alsea, and they're trying to hold on to that industry with the dredging project. We also helped the Port of Alsea fix a commercial dock specifically for commercial users, although sport fishing is perhaps a larger component there. They still have a small fleet of crabbers, and they do get a bait out of that is used by the fishing industry, shrimp types of bait. And so the dredging project has got some job component. And then small business development is dedicated to small businesses being able to grow and grow employment. I already mentioned the housing. It has the component of needing to house our workforce and being able to retain, attract, and hire workforce. Really, we've seen how big of a component the housing scenario plays into that. And I think that's something that the board talked about during their meeting, if I remember right. The Cultural Center Commons, those are focal points for these respective areas. Perhaps they don't have a lot of workers affiliated with it, but they look upon it as downtown development projects that make a community a place that workers, working families want to live and increase their just their quality of life, that type of component. So I know they're searching for that two-thirds, one-thirds, and I think it always depends on who's the applicant that particular cycle.
Well, I would certainly agree. I think particularly the projects at the top of the list are excellent examples. So, and I appreciate the work of the board in prioritizing these. And for the record, although I'm an ex officio member of that board, I did not attend that board meeting where these decisions were made. So,
They talked about every single applicant on the list, and I know some of the discussion had to do with if this is a small percentage of a large project that, you know, some of the fire protection money, they felt, well, maybe the project will go ahead without this grant, and they did, you know, discuss the impact of every grant.
Well, unfortunately, there's not enough money to fund all the projects. Mm-hmm. So again, appreciate the work of the board.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say that I used to be a member of the board, and I wasn't involved in this process at all. So, Julie, did in there this time we put the wording for that they'll use signs if there's a project where it's feasible to do it?
Oh, I don't recall if that was
that'll
in
let you go,
the,
Julie. That'll go in the award letter.
Yes,
where we put that.
And so they can pick the signs up with us. There's a little sign. We'd like to get a little more credit out around the county because we're funding so many jobs. And I have the signs available in my office, and there's more available. But so if you get one of these, then when you finish it, we'd like you to, and I'm looking back since Al C is sitting here, that we'd like you to take a picture of it and send it back in so that we know that the sign was actually placed. And is that going to be a problem for you by having that?
No, I don't think so. I was wondering if, like, some of the signs, if it's just a temporary placement there for a while, or is that something you want them to have in place?
I'd like to see it permanent. I'd like to be able to take credit for all the projects that we do around the county on a long-term basis.
Yeah. So like the Lincoln City Cultural Center, where would you like to see that sign placed by their handicap elevators?
Yeah.
Well, the Health Education Center is a really good example of giving credit to this fund. They did that on their own, but it did help their elevator, and it's right by the elevator, so I encourage people to look for that sign.
Yeah, it's up to them where they put it, but as long as it's there somewhere on the presence, they just may want to put it outside. I see that state parks and a lot of the state agencies have gotten to this now, too. And so, and it looks like they funded it all by themselves. And I'd like to make sure that since we put money in it, we get our name in the mix. Because it's amazing how many times you look, oh, well, it's money that came from
Can I also note, maybe just to, since Kerry Kemp's here also for the City of Waltport, that, you know, it's a little bit different when you've got an industrial master plan. You know,
right, you can't put that anywhere.
Well, you can put recognition or information in the master plan itself when it's developed. And then I think that's just, we can talk about that. And maybe the signage can be a secondary thing if you've got something physically on the site. But that's the sort of thing we'd be looking at for a master plan, would be recognition in the master plan. So.
And I guess I would just say I'm not necessarily concerned about where the sign is. I guess I would like to think that it would be where it's generally visible to the public rather than stuck in a corner somewhere where it would rarely be seen. But again, I think it helps the public understand the value of these funds, how these funds are invested. And it creates greater awareness of the grant process, which would encourage additional applications. So I think that's a good suggestion, Commissioner.
Yeah. So I've been in Salem the last couple of days and seeing what's going on. Needless to say, I'm nervous like everybody else because I can see a $2 billion hole in the state budget. This money is one of those things that looks vulnerable to me if they have to go grab up all the loose money anywhere they can be, and I'm worried about it. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we add projects back at the end. I'm not sure this is the year we want to do it. I see a project here that I'd like to put a little money in that's already in existence. But Doug, you got any opinions on that? Because you're watching the budget too. You're at AOC meeting.
Well, I would agree with your concerns. I think if you look at the three initiative petitions that were on the ballot, all three of them passed. All three of them, either directly or indirectly, deal with economic development funds, lottery dollars. And I think the prudent thing to do is to, rather than be adding dollars at this point in the process, let's see what happens, see what impact those the deficit as well as the ballot measures that passed have, and then I think we're in a more knowledgeable position to be able to make decisions that are sound for the future.
Well, I see one I'd like to add some money to, but it's not a, it's a project that's already there. It was just, I think, underfunded for the situation that that particular entity's in, because I do a lot of stuff in the marine area. Wayne, what kind of money is in that budget present?
Well, I think your comments, both your comments are very well taken in terms of the future and where we look. And we'll be monitoring the fund very carefully because there are more specific, dedicated activities that are going to take that money on the state level, and we'll see what that then leaves to be passed on for to us. I can tell you, though, that currently you have sufficient funds, and if you wanted to make some slight adjustment in the recommendations, as I think you were trying to indicate there, you have sufficient funds to do that that are carried over. I did monitor again that the funds that have been coming in so far in the first two quarters were slightly down, but not significantly down.
And we really wouldn't expect to see changes until the next fiscal year.
No.
Which would be July 1st.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway. Hopefully there won't be the changes. I do see a solution to the problem if they're willing to do some bonding that maybe we won't be facing like $2 billion in 1 year. And if we can spread that over multiple years, then we can not go out and try to pick up every piece of. And this is one that I'm particularly passionate about because I think we did a tremendous value out of the way that the board has handled it. And it's, I think, one of the better examples in the state of what economic development dollars are there. We named so many projects that we've got off that are big projects that came out of very small amounts of money from this. So the one project that I'll bring forward and say that I'd like to see, because I know that the Port of Alsea is sitting there without a lot of finances. I don't commercial fish there, but I think I recreational fished out of there twice this year. And you can't even get the boat away from the dock. And a lot of people have quit moving in that basin or coming down there, even though you mentioned the recreational fishery, but the recreational fishery a lot of times is 200 or 300 boats in a day down there. And they don't have a lot of rental docks, rental spaces, and dredging's expensive. So if I had my approval of Doug and if I have the votes, I'd like to bump that up to what the asking price was for them, to the $15,000. That's $5,000 added. It's not a huge amount of money. It's available Wayne, then, clearly.
Yes.
And Doug, what's your opinion on it?
I'm okay in adding money to projects I think that have been approved, and certainly $5,000 is a reasonable amount. You made a comment that you felt that, or the board felt that these were projects that that didn't require the total amount.
They just did the best they could.
Yeah, yeah.
There's
okay.
a lot of people on the board that are not familiar with Port of Rail Sea or dredging, so they just did the best they could.
Well, I guess more to the point, when I look at what are true economic drivers, certainly ports are high on that list. And I know the Port of Rail Sea is trying to, I believe, revitalize the oyster culture down mm-hmm. there. I'm mm-hmm. looking for... Mm-hmm. City Manager Kemp to nod affirmatively or negatively.
Board of Directors, right?
Oh, I'm sorry.
They're very
so is that a fair observation?
It's one thing that we're looking at. We're trying to get an idea of actually how much income you get from somebody.
Why don't you come up today so we can be here? You're welcome to come up.
I'm sorry, I didn't recognize you.
This is not a question about the grant. This is just more a question of
about the Port
more potential.
Roxy Quayler, Port Manager, Port of Alsea. We're looking at that. We're looking. It's no secret that we're looking at going out for a bond measure in May of 2018 because we desperately need to replace our entire marina. But as part of that, we're also looking at some revenue sources because we need new sources of revenue. So the oyster culture is one thing that we're looking at. We're having a hard time getting an idea of how much money you actually get from that. But we have been in talks with Pacific Seafood. They've expressed an interest, so we'll see.
Cool. I'm fine with the additional $5,000.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
So, what how do we handle this from here?
Well, commissioners, I think the normally what you do is come back at another meeting. You can come back on the 21st. If you so desire, to actually make the award, do an order that would adopt the award. That way we would meet it by the first of the year, which is, I think sometimes we make it before the first of the year, sometimes it's just in the first meeting in January. It varies a little bit, but just because of schedules, I'd actually recommend you come back next week.
Well, I'll be here next week the way it looks, since I'm not going.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you,
Carolyn. Nice job. Back over here. We are down to the Board of Commissioners and Countywide Service Districts. Nothing. We'll go to reports. And
I have just a couple of reports I'd like to do. The first is that our vacation rental dwelling, short-term dwelling ordinance is in place. It started on December 1st. We're actively taking applications to get the license that's required. And I just wanted to note that for the record and for the media, we're going to be doing another press release here to make sure that people are aware of the requirements that they're coming through to get those. We've had a lot of inquiries, quite a few inquiries about this, and we think we're going to see a flurry of activity. We've seen some activity, but we're going to see a flurry of activity coming up here. Probably most important with our code provisions, though, that I want to make sure it's very clear out there is that you provided a grandfathering provision in there that allowed for basically an excess of the maximum occupancy that's established under the licensing requirements. But the grandfathering requires that the application be made before December 31st. Again, we've gotten several inquiries, and I've actually scheduled a couple of meetings with property owners to talk about the requirements there for being grandfathered in. But that is the hard deadline on this. If you do not make that application, and the qualifying application, by the way, there's some certain requirements you have to meet, by December 31st, you will not be grandfathered. So I just want to get that information again back out to the public. We'll issue another press release, get the information out there, and see what we can do.
So if I may, just to clarify, certainly if
you are a VRD business or a new VRD business, you can get a license to do business after December 31st.
Absolutely.
However, if you have an occupancy more of the maximum, which is 16, the only way you would be able to get a license to do that is to be grandfathered, and that process is only available from December 1st to December 31st of this calendar year.
Yep, qualifying properties have to have those applications in by December 31st.
Okay. Again, I just want to emphasize that limitation.
That's great.
Wayne, do we have a feel for how many the number's going to be?
I was thinking that was going to get asked. I can tell you this. We got a call from one property manager who said that the property management has over 150 clients in Lincoln County in the unincorporated areas. So that, you know, that's one property manager for one set. I'm not going to even hazard a guess. I'm going to wait until we've had an opportunity to get the applications process. And again, we've got the forms are available online, and so you can download them and fill them out. So I think there's a lot of the people that are pulling those off and doing that now. And I think the real floor is going to come in the second half of the month when we get a lot of the applications coming in here. And then we're going to follow up to make sure people are aware of it. We're going to do some outreach too, especially to the property managers, but then follow up with, if we have to, individual property owners to make sure it's done. So I can't tell you for sure. I'm not going to even try and hazard a guess of how many we're going to end up with, but it's going to be significant.
Well, and I think it's also important to note that we will be significant, but with this process we'll all also pick up dwellings that had not necessarily been paying, collecting and remitting the transient room tax.
That's correct.
Should have been collected.
And I've asked the Treasurer's Office, which manages that particular program, to actually give us numbers. They had a start date when the ordinance actually went into effect, just to see, because they've had several inquiries and several people, before they even got their license, went on and started getting the information to do the taxing and started paying the taxes. So they'll get some numbers there, too, as to how much that comes in. So we're tracking that, too. Second item, if I might, is I wanted to give you a quick update on litigation that the county participated in. As you're aware, the county and my office filed on behalf of the coastal counties what's known as a friend of the court brief, an amicus brief, in litigation that dealt with the territorial sea plan. David Allen's here, who represented the petitioners in that particular claim, and we've been reviewing with David and his clients the basis on which they were making some challenges to amendments to the territorial sea plan, the process used there, and felt this was of extreme importance to the counties in terms of our very unique relationship, the counties, with the Ocean Policy Advisory Committee, OPAC, and the development of the territorial sea plan, our role in planning for the 3 miles out in the ocean there. So there were some issues that were raised there in terms of the process used by the state. We thought they were very valid concerns, and so we joined in with them. All the filings have been made to the Court of Appeals in the challenge. Oral arguments were held on November 2nd. Mr. Allen represented the petitioners, and I thought he did a tremendous job there in terms of articulating both the legal reasons for why the process was flawed, but then also articulating the why this is important to coastal counties and why we were participating as a friend of the court in that process. The oral arguments are complete. That process is done. And now what we do is have a fairly long wait until the Court of Appeals actually renders a decision. But I'd like Mr. Allen to come forward and maybe add a few words to that. And he can describe the process a little bit more and what it might take to get to a decision in this.
Good morning. David Allen. I reside in Newport. Wayne, thanks for those comments and the update to the commission this morning. I'm here today as the attorney for the petitioners, both of whom are from South Tillamook County, both homeowners down there, who filed a petition for judicial review in the Court of Appeals in early 2014, as Wayne mentioned, from a decision of the Land Conservation and Development Commission in 2013. which, as Wayne mentioned, adopted Part 5 to the Territorial Sea Plan, or the amended Part 5. It was an amendment to the initial Part 5, which, as you all know, pertained to the siting of renewable energy facilities such as wave energy in the state waters, which is 0 to 3 miles out. So this board has received previous updates. Back in September of last year, Wayne and I presented an update after the agency record had been filed and the briefs, the first round of briefs had been filed. Wayne, I think you provided an update of July of this year. I wasn't present after the second round of briefs were filed. So last month, oral argument occurred in front of the Court of Appeals, which is a three-judge panel in this case, 30 minutes total, 15 minutes each party. I thought the oral argument went well. And, Wayne, is there anything else you'd like to add to that? Because you were there along with a few other folks, and maybe your perspective being an observer is better than mine since I was a participant. It's sometimes difficult to do that.
Well, all I can tell you this is someone who's done some oral arguments at the Court of Appeals. It was in some ways atypical, but some ways typical, and that is David started his arguments talking about the brief and got maybe a couple minutes into it, and they started peppering with questions. And so the course of the oral arguments was such that the judges up there were obviously very well versed in the briefs, knew what was going on, knew what the issues were, and they hit both sides with some pretty hard questions. I thought that that David did a good job in representing the position that we took on this in support of him in terms of what we thought were the flaws in the process, the legal flaws, and then the policy reasons why this is important. And I thought that, honestly, the questions that went to the Department of Justice representing the state's position were harder and more difficult to answer and not as well answered. That's just my opinion.
I would just like to say one thing. I was obviously listening to the attorney representing DLCD since I was the first to present the first 15 minutes, and she was definitely given some very challenging questions. But I thought it was interesting when, in response to a question from one of the judges, this is the attorney from the Department of Justice representing the agency. She acknowledged before the court that the state's interpretation of the statute, which were challenging, seemed to be, and I'm quoting her, a strange result. And when
that sounds like a good lawyer.
And no, well, I think she was being candid with the court, and you have to be candid with the court. And, you know, sometimes when attorneys are arguing these cases, they only have what was given to them. And in this case, I think there was nothing else she could say other than the state was advocating a strange result. And when that was said, I think I felt pretty good about where we were as far as moving forward. But you never can predict these things, obviously. You have to wait for a decision from the court. And sometimes their questions might lead in one direction. But, again, the written decision is really what counts. And hopefully in a year or more, it could take a while, will have a decision. The reason why these cases take so long is these administrative type of appeals or challenges are not expedited. The Court of Appeals usually expedites certain cases like criminal cases, obviously, which they have to do, and they have to deal with those first. So these kind of administrative cases get kind of put aside until they can deal with the more pressing cases that are a higher priority. So in about a year or so, we'll probably have a written decision, hopefully, by the end of next year from the court.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, go on.
Mike, boil down to, what do you win if you win the case overall?
And I was going to get to that, so you were reading my mind. That was the next on my list of things to mention, because I know Wayne was probably going to want to mention
it. I've been around lawyers too long now. I'm starting to read their minds.
You know, that's kind of scary, Terry, when you're starting to read my mind, given all the work we've done together over the years. And just so you know, I'm here as an attorney today representing the petitioners, but I've served for the past 10 years on the Oregon Ocean Policy Advisory Council as the public at large representative, and now I'm currently the city elected official representative. And Terry has served as the North Coastal County representative. So Terry and I have gotten to know each other very well over the years on these issues since we both served on OPAC, which is the group that we believe, as the petitioners who filed this challenge, is the recommendation that the commission, the Land Conservation and Development Commission, should have adopted. And that's really what we're getting at here is the challenge is to invalidate the decision by the commission, the Land Conservation and Development Commission, in adopting what we believe was the staff recommendation instead of the OPAC recommendation. We believe under the statute they needed to follow the OPAC recommendation. So our goal is to have the court invalidate the decision by the commission and send it back down to the commission for either two things: adopt the OPAC recommendation, which the commission thought was a very good recommendation, but they decided to move in a different direction. Or if they don't adopt OPAC's recommendation, send it back down to OPAC for further review and revision. So it's more of a procedural challenge, and these are the kind of challenges that you can do under the Administrative Procedures Act. We're not really talking about substance here. It was really procedure, but procedure, as you know, can be just as important as substance, and that's hopefully how the court will look at this issue and hopefully agree with us on our interpretation of the statute. But I'd just like to add one final thing, and this is, Wayne, you probably don't like to hear this because you never like to be commended on the work you've done, but I would really, and I mean this sincerely, I would like to thank Wayne in particular, and a lot of the other people helped on this, but Wayne in particular worked very hard on the amicus brief and also coordinating all the other county councils from all the other coastal counties in supporting the brief that he worked on along with his staff. And Janet did a really good job. You were working weekends, and I know that. So I just want to thank you for the work you did, because at the end of the day, the brief filed by the counties and, as you know, the submarine cable industry also got involved with their amicus brief supporting our legal challenge. The briefs filed by those two entities showed, in my view, the court that it illustrated the importance of this legal challenge to the court, and it showed that it went beyond the two individual petitioners who filed the petition. It was more of a coastal, regional, and even perhaps international issue, since the submarine cable industry deals internationally on issues. So it really was more about two individuals. It was about a lot of entities with a lot of importance throughout the region in support of what we did, or at least in support of the challenge that we filed. And I want to thank you for that, Wayne. I've said it a number of times. I want to say it publicly, because I thought you did an excellent job on the brief and in moving forward with the other coastal counties on this.
So, if you don't mind, I'll make a response to this too and see if you agree. The consequences of this decision, the agencies looked at it as a fairly insignificant decision, but when you see all the groups that were involved in the coastal counties, it's obvious it wasn't an insignificant decision, but it's important that we get our place at the table, more or less. And they were just kind of pushing us aside. They looked at it as insignificant. We looked at it as significant. And it will be interesting to see what the final decision comes down, because they didn't follow the process that they should have. Have I said that?
I think that's right.
I think what occurred, since this really was something that occurred at the Ocean Policy Advisory Council level, that Terry and I were both present when it did occur, and obviously when I made that decision as part of OPAC, we never knew there was going to be a legal challenge, because that all occurred subsequent to that. So this was really, as an OPAC member, I'm now speaking as an OPAC member, not as the attorney for the petitioners, but what I observed as part of that OPAC process, as well as you, Terry, what you observed was OPAC did a very thorough job over about 5 or 6 years in developing this plan. And I think we came up with a very good recommendation, trying to take into account all the different interest groups. Unfortunately, the recommendation that we came forward with at the Ocean Policy Advisory Council wasn't the recommendation that the state agencies and perhaps even the governor's office was looking for. So in light of that, they decided to work on another recommendation that incorporated some of our recommendation in OPAC, but changed some very critical things. And I think they believed they could do that under the statute, or they believed that they had the authority to do it anyways. I don't think they realized how much that was going to raise an issue with the coastal counties and the coastal communities and what they did. I think they believed people would just perhaps go along with it.
Right.
What they didn't realize was, we didn't go along with it. In fact, two individuals who I now represent were so concerned about it, they decided to challenge it. And I think in that challenge, we've done two things. If we prevail on appeal, then the agency and the governor's office were wrong on the statute. If we don't prevail, I think we still send a strong message, because even if we don't win the appeal, the message that is being sent is, if you divert from what the coastal communities and the coastal interests want, you know, we're not going to just go along with it. We're going to challenge it. And I think that sends just as strong a message as prevailing on appeal. So either way, I think, win or lose the appeal, I think we achieved many of our objectives with respect to the issue about the agencies and the governor's office, to some extent, not listening to the coastal interests and the coastal communities.
I would agree with that.
Okay. And I wanted to thank the University of Oregon intern law students that were here that helped Wayne. We yes. happened to have had the manpower.
It was great.
To do it.
There's a lot of research for us. So.
And also, I know Anna wasn't here to speak, which is probably fortunate since, you know, we're at 10:15. But Anna, along with Wayne, I should have mentioned Anna. Yeah. Anna was very much an active participant Absolutely. In working on the amicus brief and on the issues that you raised in your brief, Wayne. So I want to mention Anna as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's our planning director. If you're not familiar, he's the Lincoln County planning director, and he is a planning director that understands ocean policy.
Actually, a graduate of the University of Oregon Law School, too.
Right.
I was going to say, he's not only a lawyer, but he was also, I believe, the executive director of the
OCCMA.
In fact, most of the work that
Management Association.
Most of the work that Anno did on this Part 5 process was when he was still the OCZMA executive director. So,
thank
but
you.
He was very valuable in that process.
I would say good work to all.
Yeah,
yeah thank you.
Well, thanks.
It's
going
to be interesting to see how this
it
resolves.
Will
it will be. I'm. You know, we've got a year to wait, but that year goes by pretty fast. So. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, David.
I guess we move down to commissioners' reports.
Well, I'll just briefly say that Commissioner Hall, who is now the president of the Association of Oregon Counties, which is the business entity, if you will, that represents the counties in Salem, he chaired his first meeting of the Legislative Committee and the Board of Directors on Monday. I was there. I'm co-chair of the Governance Steering Committee. I'm a member of the newly organized Resilience Committee, which is a subcommittee of the Public Safety Steering Committee. I serve on the Legislative Committee on a board of, and on a Board of Directors. So Commissioner Hall was there running meetings, and lots going on in anticipation of the coming legislative session.
Yep. You want to mention anything about the things you learned at the AOC meeting and your governance board? I think some of those were important. I was thinking particularly some of the ideas that were presented on filling the budget hole. That's going to affect everybody.
Well, there's a lot of discussion about the budget, not only as it affected some of the potential legislative matters that we discussed at the governance meeting, but certainly there were legislative representatives from the House and the Senate that attended the Legislative Committee meeting. And there's a broad range of solutions. Certainly there's some concern from that came out of the business summit in Portland about the business sector's willingness to provide some revenue. Democrats are concerned about cutting services. And I think the bottom line is that there's going to have to be some give by both sides of the aisle, if you will. I don't think you can solve the problem without some reduction in expenses and probably some kind of enhanced revenue. Commissioner Thompson, you mentioned the potential for bonding, which would fund the unfunded liability as far as PERS is concerned. I think that certainly has some potential. I don't know what the legislative appetite is for that, but I certainly see that as a possible part of the solution.
Well, I'll describe it a little bit. There was an example that I found appealing because I've been through making major cuts of trying to find $1 billion. Yeah. And when I was a state representative, and it's a horrible experience because there's nobody wants to be cut in that situation, especially from their existing program. It's really tough going. Not saying you can't do some of that, but to go after $2 billion right. would be a tremendous challenge that I think when the public saw it rolled out to them, they'd be real upset. I don't care whether it's education, because if you just take the numbers normally, it'd be $1 billion whacked out of education if you just cut it across to everything evenly. And the ramifications of that would be extreme. But because PERS and the lawsuit dealt with Tier 1 employees, and most of those employees are getting older, so there's probably about a 20-year time period, or maybe less, that most of those employees would get their benefits. And if they were to take a bond and spread it out, that $2 million hole, which isn't all PERS, but to fill that hole, by spreading it out over a time period, it may cut it down to a number that's a reasonable amount to go after to cut. And then if you have a strong economy and stock market during the time, it'll also cover a lot of that hole. But to try to expect the economy to pick up to cover a $2 billion hole is almost impossible.
Well, I think
so. There is a possibility of it.
Well, I think your comments about the economy, in all candor, I think that's how we got into the mess we're in. When the decisions were made for the Tier 1 employees, it was based on, you know, a time when the stock market was returning 8, 10, 12% annually, and it was the expectation was that that would continue into the future. And of course, that's been proven to not be the case. So I think your comments are right on.
Well, it's the difference between this and a lot of other debts is this has a time frame limit to it because people get older and then they don't have to pay them after they've expired. And so it makes it a different situation so that maybe long-term bonding is the answer. They're going to deal with it. It's going to be interesting to watch. But at least I see a potential out there for a solution besides tremendous waxed education and all the other parts of the state.
I hope that'd be a big, big part of the solution.
Yeah. Anything else?
No.
Okay. It's going to be an exciting session, I'll say that. I'm just over there, I'm walking out of there going, wow.
Well, if the governance committee agenda packet was 96 pages, and that's before any of the bills have actually been filed. It was all based on legislative concepts, so it will be an interesting session.
The bills are going into the hopper now, the pre-session filings. Those bills are starting to roll out, and this was going to be, I think, as wild a session as I can remember, just looking at what I see going on there pre-session, and it's always wild. Okay.
Yeah, more wild than usual.
We move down to constituent input. Is there anybody who'd like to address the board? Seeing no we don't have an executive session.
No.
And Tanya, when's our next board meeting and where?
21st here.
Be the 21st here. So.
9:30.
Nothing else. I'll adjourn the meeting.